Well, I'm excited to be here, and I really want to thank Naomi for her efforts in putting this session together, and the technicians for their efforts in trying to figure out why I have a blank screen. There we go. I just want to say that, you know, I really appreciate the notion of desirable difficulties, but I'm in science, and we've got plenty without any help from Bob, although I'm sure that, you know, if we added some, we could deter even more people from interest in science education. And already when I mention this, most people go rushing away from me. I really am popular at cocktail parties if I mention that I'm in science education. At any rate, I'd like to think about how we can make sense of this very fascinating report that has recently come out, Knowing What Students Know, and think about it for science education. What can we do in science education? How can we think about the way we test and assess and monitor progress and the relationships between those assessments and the instructional opportunities that we offer students? One of the comments in the report that struck me as very, very important basically says that a model of learning and cognition should serve as the cornerstone of assessment design. And I think actually, of course, it should also serve as the cornerstone of instructional design. And what I'd like to do is to look at some historical and current work from our group that starts to give us a sense of how that kind of a approach can be implemented. I'm going to be talking about what we call knowledge integration, which is essentially a perspective on how people learn that comes pretty close to integrating and amalgamating most of the research that has gone on with regard to the kinds of things that people do from a constructivist perspective when they come to make sense of scientific material. And I want to look at that notion in sort of three components. As we've been looking at the literature and at our own findings, it seems like there are sort of at least three parts of knowledge integration that need to work together in order for students to really gain the kinds of understanding that we're looking for. That is, learners certainly have an interpretive character. That is, they make sense of the world around them, and a vast array of research has identified the various kinds of intuitions and conjectures that students make in interacting with the natural world. And you all have wonderful examples, and so do we, with regard to things like, sweaters can warm you up, and so if you want to keep your drink cold, please don't wrap it in an insulator. And so we've been trying to make sense of how do we build on this kind of understanding to promote scientific ideas and to make sure that those are a continuous process of making sense of the material that students encounter. That is, we want to essentially harness this process that students use to try to make sense of their experience, but directed towards a more normative view. A second aspect of knowledge integration that has become more and more, I think, apparent to us as we study students in actual settings is that students have a very clear set of cultural expectations with regard to science. One of those is that science is hard. Another is that you don't really need to learn science because it's not going to be relevant to your life. And the third is that it's kind of nerdy. So, you know, certainly you don't want to admit that you're learning science. And I think that in order to think about how people integrate their ideas, what kind of a model we want to have, we have to think about that as well. What is it that makes science something that you do think is important, and how do we help people develop norms and standards of evidence that will enable them to make sense of new scientific material and dilemmas as their experiences continue. And I'm going to talk briefly about our contemporary controversy work, and specifically about genetically modified food, as an area where it's very important for people to make good sense of the kinds of evidence that they encounter, and where we are studying the kinds of things that students do think about in that domain. Finally, it's clear that science requires learners to be very deliberate. That is, if you want to be literate in science today, you're going to need to continuously confront and make sense of new material as it comes along. And these are decisions that students make on their own after they leave science class, which often is as early as ninth grade, the last time that they encounter any science instruction in many of our schools. So how do we enable students to become deliberate learners and to essentially harness this process that involves their personal decision-making concerning science? So with that as sort of a framework, it seems to me that it's important to look at how the assessment and the instruction work together and what we can do to make sense of the opportunities that we have as no child is left untested. So first of all, on the interpretive side, one of the things that we've talked about before and I wanted to remind you of is that it makes a lot of difference how you basically iteratively refine instruction. So in our early work in teaching heat and temperature, what we found is that the textbook resulted in about 3 or 4% of the students understanding the difference between heat and temperature. And when we tried to improve on that, initially we weren't very much more successful. But eventually, after we spent 7 different iterations thinking about what to do to make knowledge integration happen more clearly, we came up with a program which takes about half the students up to a full coherent understanding of the distinction between heat and temperature, where they can not only explain it but give good examples and interpret it in new situations. And indeed, this level of understanding exceeds that we were able to determine for honors chemistry students in college at Berkeley. So clearly, eighth graders can make progress and understand this complicated idea. However, this is definitely not standards-based. This curriculum lasted 12 weeks. It would be impossible to spend 12 weeks on heat and temperature in the standards-based environment that we face. In fact, the standards call for 65 topics to be covered in eighth grade. The average is 20, and only Japan covers 8, which may only, of course, organize refreshments so that we could remember that. So clearly this is not standard-based, and one of the questions is, are there ways to take advantage of what we know about promoting knowledge integration and some of the desirable difficulties that Bob's been mentioning to do something like encourage students to learn science one inquiry project at a time? And I'm going to talk a little about that as I proceed here. But first I want to give you some evidence concerning the advantage of a depth program. We looked at the students who were in this lengthy program to understand heat and temperature and assess their performance when they were in high school. And what we found was that they retained their understanding of the distinction between heat and temperature and the other elements that they were taught quite well. In fact, their performance on the test questions that we gave them in high school exceeded that of the performance that we were able to identify in eighth grade. And traditionally educated students in high school looked identical to entering students in eighth grade. Furthermore, an interesting little dot on this graph relates in a bit to the math versus distributed practice, but it does suggest that maybe there's too big an interval in some cases, because the students that we interviewed twice between eighth grade and high school did phenomenally better than those that we didn't interview, suggesting that although we worked hard to create a curriculum that we thought would enable students to revisit their ideas about heat and temperature, clearly a one-hour interview interspersed 2 years and 2 years again has a far greater impact on eliciting the kinds of ideas that students learned in eighth grade than complete neglect over that period. And I think this also has very important implications for the design of instruction that might promote knowledge integration. It's clear that if we had a more coherent curriculum, it would be likely that students would revisit ideas that they learned in eighth grade and therefore have these opportunities that we provided in the interviews. And I think this is something that our research has neglected and that we need to really think about emphasizing. I see more evidence now that we're calling for coherence in the curriculum, but that is really contrary to the standards that we have currently in place in the United States. And so it really calls for us to think hard about what it is that's standards-based and also lifelong learning-based. I wanted to talk a little bit about what I'm calling the cultural aspect of knowledge integration, because in this work with the computer as learning program, one of the things that was central to it, and one of the reasons we thought students would revisit their ideas, is that we used a lot of very personally relevant examples. Students created picnic containers to keep food safe. They thought about the design of clothing to survive in the wilderness. They designed houses to keep cool during the day and warm at night in the desert, etc. So they did lots of things that potentially could have caused them to revisit their ideas, and also made science more personally relevant than was characteristic of a textbook, where, for example, there were pictures of electrons and other such things moving that sort of were supposed to suggest there was something to do with heat and temperature. What we found is that this program was very successful in getting both men and women to believe that science is more relevant. Women in this area are quite sophisticated. They already recognize the relevance of science far more frequently than men. But when we looked at it longitudinally, there's, you know, hope for men. It did catch up. Basically what we found was that this particular curriculum was quite successful in convincing people that science could be relevant, and the question here asks them not only to say that, but to give some examples of the kinds of things that they use that they've learned in science class in their everyday life. Looking again at those high school students who took this program in eighth grade, a similar pattern is found for the relevance dimension as we found for understanding of heat and temperature. That is, the relevance commitments that students develop in eighth grade persist. And students who are in the traditional program who haven't had this initial bounce, this initial opportunity to do science that is relevant, and most of our students actually use examples from heat and temperature in 12th grade, don't report a similar commitment to believing that science is relevant to their lives. In fact, only 57% of the students in, these are in high school science, say that they've learned anything in science that's relevant to their lives, and only 34% can give an example in the traditional program. In contrast, almost 100% of the students who were in this program are able to say that science is relevant to their lives, and about two-thirds of them can give a good example. We have also looked at another aspect of the cultural component of knowledge integration, that is essentially our students starting to understand the cultural nature of science, the epistemological underpinnings of scientific advance, and in particular, what are their thoughts about whether debate has an advantage or a disadvantage for the advancement of scientific understanding. Students frequently tell us that the popular press accounts of science reflect the fact that scientists are perverse, rather than any indication that there might be some benefit to discussing scientific ideas as part of the potential understanding of these issues. And it turns out that when students participate in debate-based scientific activities, they're more likely to recognize that debate might have some contribution to scientific advance. But frankly, the results are still surprisingly low, and I think this is an area that our work suggests deserves considerably more thought as we design instructional material. And I'd like to talk now to a little bit about an instructional unit on genetically modified food that really looks at how we can engage students in thinking about the controversies that are in their lives, essentially contemporary controversies. We used the knowledge integration assessment in this unit that got a little bit more at what we're calling the deliberate nature of knowledge integration, in the sense that students were doing a project and writing an essay about essentially what agricultural method do you think should be used here in California, and why do you think we should use this method. And we scored it on the basis of the arguments that they made, the evidence that they used for them, their ability to articulate trade-offs between the various methods that they had studied. Students studied this unit using the web-based integrated science environment. They encountered evidence that illustrated trade-offs. For example, a piece of evidence showing that Hawaiian farmers were essentially going to have to give up on the cultivation and growth of papayas due to pests that were basically killing the crop, but by creating a genetically modified version of the papaya, the farmers were able to maintain this area of research. and grow. It will continue to grow, suppliers in Southern. And so this is an issue, this is a piece of evidence that actually is quite surprising to the students. Almost all the students come into this class believing that genetically modified foods are essentially bad. They've been, you know, sort of convinced that the vegan foods argument makes sense and that you shouldn't tamper with plants. Another aspect of the instruction is that students look at the history of corn and get a sense of the fact that that just with normal processes of selection and setting up crosses, one can really dramatically change the nature of plants. And then they contrast that with the genetically modified situation. They do a jigsaw activity where they look at a variety of different kinds of evidence and analyze their impact on agriculture, and then they actually present their results to their peers and write these position papers that I mentioned. What I'd like to talk here about is one of the other ways that we can use, I think, knowledge integration assessment to good purpose, and that is essentially using the results from these assessments to redesign instruction so that it makes more sense. And what we found was that in the pilot run, although students were starting to understand this complex issue of genetically modified foods, they thought that it was quite easy to avoid eating, for example, genetically modified corn. And so one of the revisions to the activity was to include evidence in a note about people with corn allergies, which essentially included the difficulty of avoiding any product that's made out of corn. In fact, the list of products that are made out that have corn in them is really pretty amazing. This picture shows a few, but it turns out that many automotive parts actually have corn on them. Another thing that was really, that is really quite difficult, this unit goes for about, let's see, I think it's 6 to 9 days of instruction, which for most teachers today is a massive commitment to English. Okay, I will stop in a second. And what we found was that most students weren't able to figure out exactly what was going on with crosses versus genetic engineering. And here's one of the examples of revision. And just to quickly show you the results, in the comparison, in the new situation and the original school, which is not a controlled experiment, the first school, which would have been happy to redo this activity, had a fire and the computers were destroyed and they're still actually not replaced, so we moved to a different school. What we found actually were similar outcomes, but when we looked in more detail at knowledge integration, the results showed that, in fact, when students wrote essays about their favorite choice of for agricultural farming, they used more examples of trade-offs in the improved instruction than they did in the original instruction. So this basically is an example of how we can use assessment to rethink the design of curriculum material. Thank you very much.